Welcome to the Spooky Church Podcast, where we discuss religious aspects of horror and other spooky fiction. Today, we are talking about Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, Episode 3, called The Trial of Sabrina Spellman. And I'm Zeph.
And I'm Amber.
All right. So, just like before starting the actual episode, I was paying attention for Blackwood's nails, which I finally noticed, and now I have no idea how I didn't see them before. They really are disgusting.
They're horrible, aren't they?
They really are.
They're like talons. They're the worst thing I've ever seen. So, thank you for backing me up on this.
And then also, since I was just listening to episode one, well, not episode one, the one where we discussed Netflix episode one, right. And we talked a lot about, like, the witch's maturity process and how old Ambrose actually is. And it just hit me that we never see Sabrina's grandparents, and that even though you would assume that her dad and her aunts were all of generally childbearing age for like decades, the aunts don't have any kids, and as far as we know, Edward only has the one. So yeah, they probably do mature very, very slowly, and are actually like emotionally whatever the age they appear to be in our terms.
Yeah.
That was my theory.
Yes. I like it. Okay. It's a good theory, and I approve of it, since it was mine.
Yes, you're a genius. Okay. I should just listen to you.
No, that's not true, because without that, we wouldn't have the...
So the actual episode.
Yeah.
Okay. We left off with Belky doing the creepy devil-possessed thing. And Sabrina running away.
Which was very gross.
And Miss Wardwell, like, follows her and, like, is doing... Yeah, they're definitely blurring the boundaries now of appropriate teacher-student behavior. Like, she doesn't do anything really wrong. But I'm just like, I don't like teachers that close to me. You can back up a little. But that's fine.
Well, in fairness, I don't like anybody that close to me. And she's real creepy about it, too.
Yeah.
But I also was watching. I'm like, is she... Okay, because I know that one of my things was maybe she helped him possess Principal Balky, but then I thought, well, maybe she didn't know about it, right. And she just didn't, was quietly seething because he is, you know, messing with her plan by freaking Sabrina out more about, you know, signing her soul over to the devil.
Yeah.
You know.
And she definitely has a thing where she likes doing things her way. And she has this argument with Blackwood a lot in this episode where it's like, ugh, men like to do things like the brute force way. I have my methods. It was working. Back off. So I don't think she was helping him, and she might be sort of frustrated at the, like, interference.
Oh, definitely. I think so. You should just sit back and let her do her job. But, yeah, so Madam Satan being inappropriate and weird. But really good at it, so, you know, gotta give her that. Do we go from there back to the funeral home?
Yes, because what I wrote was lizard friend! Because the iguana is just sitting, I think, on top of his coffin, which is kind of adorable, kind of weird.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, but then how did the iguana get there? I know it's a familiar, but well, I guess that sort of answers that. I don't know, I just think of it like walking along in iguana form.
You know how there's story... Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, that was pretty much it. It was me imagining this iguana trying to hitchhike all the way to the funeral home.
I love it.
I know it has magical powers, but...
No, there's stories of, like, even when owners move away, and, like, there's... I watched a documentary once, I think, of, like, these people who moved away and lost their cat right when they had to move, so they thought she was just lost forever. Yeah. And then they're like, but then she just showed up 4 states away. And the general theory from, like, the experts who were, like, talking on the documentary are like, that's probably not their cat, but, you know, cats look close enough like each other and you want to believe. So it's fine. Just pretend it's that cat. But this one's an actual magical one that could find it, so I'm just going to assume he was drawn to his witch.
Yeah, we'll assume. But yeah, no, those are always really touching stories, but yeah, when you think about it, you're like, but no, but it didn't. So, yeah. It's a similar cat, and we're just going to go with it. But yeah, this is definitely the iguana, because it's the familiar iguana. So
yeah. And we get some interesting thing because Ambrose takes it. He's just like cuddling it and it's so cute. But he's like, how do you get another witch's familiar to talk to you? And interestingly, they don't answer because she assumes that he wants to like adopt it. And is like, you can't. You're not allowed one. So
right.
But she's gonna take care of it. I think relevant later, but we'll get to that.
Yes.
So then I also noted that it's really, we talked about how little Salem talks and how frustrating that is. And also the theory that that might not always be Salem, in which case if it was someone else's familiar stalking her, it wouldn't be able to.
True. So, or that it's somebody taking the form of the familiar.
Right.
But that's, I admit, outlandish. So, I'm looking forward. I'm hoping that they have him talk more next season. So that's all.
That'd be really cool. I hope so too.
Yes. Because we get several familiars that talk and there's the knowledge that they can talk. He just doesn't. A little annoying. But whatever. That's fine. It's fine. It's not all about me. So, and was it Zelda who offered to make it quick for the iguana to die?
And both of the others just looked disgusted. And Ambrose was like, no, he's fine.
Like, I'll take care of him. It'll be fine. The poor iguana.
Yeah. She says it would be unbearable for a familiar to live without its witch, which is a convenient thing to have. Like, that makes this whole familiar deal a very, very bad deal for the familiar, if it's true. But it also kind of feels like something witches would just say to sort of force familiars into a servile relationship and like more power things. Like, it seems like it shouldn't be a real thing, but maybe that's part of the deal. I don't know, because we don't really see like no spells being done. Like, how we saw Salem become Sabrina's familiar was just he showed up.
Right, but so the Sabrina-Salem relationship is different, though. I mean, I'm assuming, because she didn't go in. Like, they had that whole book and they were offering her like goblins that were bred to the service, and he went out and offered and was just like, hey, I want a partner, not a servant, not a slave. So I don't know if there is something normally, and also Sabrina's still not fully a witch,
right?
So I don't know, there's not a whole lot. I mean, they have familiars, but we don't get a whole lot of how they work exactly either.
Yeah, and for all we know, there was a binding ritual that Sabrina and Salem performed like just off screen. We see him like the next morning,
right. Just like, hey, here's my cat. He used to be a goblin. This is cool, right?
They also kind of wonder, because, like, so at least Sabrina knew what to, like, she had people training her and telling her what a familiar was and knew how to do that spell to call one.
Right.
Connor didn't, supposedly. Like, he was adopted by human parents. You wonder how he encountered this in the first place, if a familiar, like, just showed up one day and was like, you've got magic and I want it.
Right. Which, I think this is one of those hints that there's a lot more going on with the whole Connor storyline than they're leaving it there. Because unless he also found a wild goblin that was willing to turn himself into a lizard, I'm not sure how he was going to do that.
Right.
And is it that he was dabbling with, like, let's call it, like, the dime store magic, you know, in the bookstore looking up, like, Wicca and stuff like that. And somebody else recognized that he had actual magic and was like, hey, I can help you out here a little bit. So, don't know. I'm interested in that. Again, Ambrose solving mysteries.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll find out. Or we won't. They'll just drop it. But we'll probably find out.
Ah, the thought of not finding out really irritates me. So we're going to hope we find out.
So then we're at the school.
Give up on life.
They're just like eating lunch or any breakfast on the steps like you do in high school. And Roz is really upset because she can't read a book. And I'm going to have issues with this the whole time, but that's okay.
Which part of this are you going to have issues with?
So,
aside from the fighting,
book banning is bad, and I agree with fighting it in general, but she's like, she's unreasonably upset about it because. Okay, so just skipping towards the end, because we're going to cover it anyway. It's not a spoiler at this point.
Yeah.
She's losing her eyesight. And so she has to read it in the next couple of months. She can't wait for them to make a decision about it. But no one's saying she can't read it. And also, there are so many books that you also won't be able to read with your eyes in a few months. And also, there's Braille. So, like, well, this isn't the big world-ending thing she's making it out to be, but it is an injustice that they should totally be fighting for on its own.
Right, well, because it's not just, we find out, it's not just that the bluest eye has been soft banned, but anything that they found controversial, right?
Right.
And on the one hand, as a book lover and as someone whose eyesight is really, really bad, on the one hand, I've considered, you know, eventually I may not be able to read things. And I'm like, okay, but there's audiobooks and there's Braille. I could probably learn Braille if I put my mind to it. So on the one hand, I understand Roz's concern about losing her sight, especially given she's so young. But on the other hand, that was also my thought was, but there are other ways that you can read the books.
Yes.
And the whole, I don't know. Yeah. The whole, her having to read it for a school thing is very contrived.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that was just some way for them to, like, shoehorn in the fact that she's going to go blind as opposed to just, you know, mentioning it.
Right. It has problems. I feel like there are other ways to do that better, but hey, I'm not writing the show for other people to watch, so I can't judge too much.
You shouldn't ban books. I understand not wanting people of a certain age to read books without understanding the context of the books. So that would just imply to me that you should teach a class and have these books being read in the class so you can have discussions about them, as opposed to somebody going off and reading this and thinking that this is normal behavior, you know? So, I don't know. I think they were trying too hard to push a lesson, and it didn't work. Because, you should be able to read anything.
I do appreciate that Harvey's like, you can't read The Bluest Eye, but it's a classic. And I'm just like, that doesn't seem like a Harvey level of knowledge I would expect in high school. But you go, Harvey.
No, but Harvey is also a nerd. I think we know this because of, well, he's at least a comic book nerd.
And he's friends with Roz. So she may have, like, already, like, she seems really into this book. She probably explained it to him and told him it was a classic last week. And that is what he knows about the book. Like,
yes. For Harvey. He's like, I know this one thing. Someday Harvey will be able to have his own opinion about things.
I hope so.
Okay, that sounds bad. Not that they aren't letting him form opinions, but he'll, like, learn enough that he will get to form his own opinions.
Yeah, right now he doesn't want his own opinions. They'll let him have one. He's just so confused all the time.
There's so much going on that he doesn't understand. So we've got that going on. The school's being, you know, terrible about it and everything. And then Sabrina heads home and she's all like torn up about this whole book thing. And then her aunts tell her that, hey, you're on trial. Enjoy.
She's upset about the book thing, but I think this is also meant to be the same day it was, or maybe not, maybe it is the next day. But I thought that she, like, just got, had that incident in the office, so she was going home to be like, you'll never guess what happened, the devil attacked me in his office.
No, I think that's the same day, but she comes, because I think she comes in and she's not talking about the devil, or maybe that's what she was going to lead in, because she's like, you'll never believe what happened, or something like that. And I assumed it was about the books. Which seems silly, but now that you remind me of that, yes, it might have been about actual Satan showing up. That does seem more important.
But they also say, we think we can guess, so they probably assumed, like, something related to the summons, because they've gotten word that they're all on trial.
Right, because that seems fair. Then again, apparently witch law says you're guilty until proven innocent, so fairness is not taken into consideration.
Yeah. I like how he explains it, because first of all, the oppositing, again, is a huge thing in this episode that made me laugh a lot, but Ambrose explains, in case you didn't catch it, like, no, witch law, the exact opposite. Guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah.
You couldn't follow that train of logic. I love him.
It seems like a ridiculous little bit of oppositing, but whatever. Okay. Because, I don't know. I just expect better from them. Which is weird, because again, Satan, but...
Well, later, at one point, like, the... Whatever they are that run the court, when everyone's just talking amongst themselves, like, disorder in the court. And I'm like, that's what's happening. You don't need to call for that. There is currently disorder in the court.
It's thematic but unhelpful.
Yes.
So.
Anyway, so Sabrina needs to fight this, and Ambrose says, do you know Daniel Webster? And she doesn't. In this universe, everyone knows the bluest eye, and no one has heard the story of the devil and Daniel Webster. And I'm perfectly fine with this. This is how it should be.
Well, but in this world, Daniel Webster is not a fictional and or historical character. He's a dude living, three streets over. So I could see where maybe they didn't want that story of him, beating the devil, getting too far around. It seems like something he'd watch. But yeah, no. I enjoyed that story, though.
It's a good story. I'll talk about that. Well, I can just do that now. So I actually looked it up because I knew the story of the devil and Daniel Webster, but I just wanted to look it up and review to see if there were look for references.
Important, theme.
So Daniel Webster is an actual person that existed in history, but apparently not in their universe. The devil and Daniel Webster, the story, is actually sort of inspired by a short one called The Devil and Tom Walker. So it's not even that original. They just stuck a historical person to it to be a very pro-America thing, where the whole basis of Daniel Webster's argument is that the person he's defending is an American citizen and yay America. And he's not he makes a terrible argument that apparently isn't very, actually sense-making at all, but the jury's like, I'm inspired! America is great! Go team! And lets him off the hook.
Right. And also, the jury is full of, really evil, terrible people. And they flat out are just like, it doesn't work, but we'll allow it. Because you look good doing it, basically. So, he bluffs his way through it, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Probably not the moral of the story, but I enjoyed it for that.
Also, the devil in the story has the name Mr. Scratch, which I think you had mentioned this, was a name for the devil for Nick Scratch. And yay!
More fuel to my theory that he is the Antichrist, or, the actual devil. I don't know. I just love the name. Nick Scratch. And then she goes to see Daniel Webster, but gets rejected because he's not a fan, not there for it. And then I think we're back to Zelda trying to deal with Faustus. Black Widow, I hate you.
So she's like, can we just work this out between us? All sexy voiced. And he's like, no, we can't, but just bring her, tell her, complete submission. And she promises she will, which she should stop making promises for other people. That's how this happened. It's a bad move.
Yep.
But also, he's such a cold, horrible person. He, strokes her hair, and he's like, oh, poor Zelda, the ravages of age have already caught up with you. And then, a part of her hair falls out. He's so mean. It's so well done.
Yeah, he's
and she just gathers herself up and, very gracefully and proudly walks out, and she's awesome.
Yeah, she is. But I think it's also the thing is that he needs to have the spectacle of the trial because she embarrassed him.
Yeah.
Sabrina just flat out embarrassed him, and he has to hurt her to make this work for him.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have Madam Satan showing up and telling him that he is an idiot, basically.
Right. And he tells her that she is weak and her will is womanly, which, okay. Yeah. That's a thing.
Honey, do you not? Okay, if I were him, I'm not sure that I would be so rude to an actual demon that's just wandering around in my room. I guess he thinks that he is, the baddest of the bad. But she is a demon. He may not know who she is, fully, but she could definitely eat him.
Yes, but she tells him.
She should have beaten him. But anyway, she raises the whole tone of everything, as always. I love her.
Yes.
And then we're back to, you know, we'll just see who, you know, see who wins here, see who works, although they both are playing for the same team, yep. sort of. Oh. And then we're at the trial.
I think first we have, like, the little side story of Harvey's brother is like, oh, you make such good art, it's twisted, but you're great. And they're like, love, 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 best brothers ever. And then their dad overhears that Harvey was offered a part-time job in a comic store, which is exactly equivalent right. to working in the mines. And he wants his youngest yes. high school age son to go work in the mines instead. I don't, well, he's just a bad dad for no reason. I don't understand it.
Well, he's also, like, an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So, I have a lot of trouble being sympathetic to people who are portrayed this way in television, I have the thing. Mm-hmm. So, I really hate him a lot, and he should get killed in a cave-in. But, like, I don't know. The attitude doesn't strike me as that weird given him. And this may just be my own problems. But yeah, people who drink like that tend to be irrational jackasses. So sure, throw your son in a mine. That seems like something you would... Anyway, so we get that. And yeah, the brothers are adorable. And then...
Then we're back at the court. And way earlier on, we had a do witches go to hell thing. And well, apparently they go to like some form of hell, to the pit, because Sabrina's sentence, if she's found guilty, is 333 years in the pit. And I'm wondering if it'll be the full 666 if she was a full witch, and if she gets a half sentence, because she's a half witch.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. Oh. Oh, I didn't get that. That's good. The numbers didn't even occur to me. Oh. Yes, definitely. But that's a punishment. So we still don't know if like, regular witches just go to hell. Hmm. Oh, yeah. Half witch, half the president. Yes. I like it. Love it. So.
And so Daniel Webster decides that he is going to defend her and shows up while they're there. And we learned yep. that he knew Edward, because Edward had a habit of picking up mortals and being like, hey, you know, there's this whole world of magic and devil worship, and you should totally be a part of it. Which is interesting.
Yep. It's like he got bored with witches and just kept picking up humans. Yep. It was like, hey, this is fun. Let's do this. Ha. Huh. So, but that also means that he knows witch law, because Edward taught him, or at least helped him figure it out. Yep. And... do we have part of the trial before? No, because the aunts are yelling at her for picking up this petty, what do they call them? Petty mortal dabbler or something? Yeah. They're very insulting to the guy who's there to try and save their niece. And then we get back to the actual trial because they agree that he's going to be the lawyer. And there's a lot of the making the connection between the dark baptism being a marriage, you know, loaded language about, you know, the act of signing being a consummation and yada, yada, yada. And there's a lot of, you know, well, weren't you flirting with the Dark Lord and weren't you courting the Dark Lord and all this stuff? And then when the crowd goes out of control, a bunch of people are calling her, Sabrina, a tramp. They really like, not sexualized, but it's sort of coded that yeah. way, that she led the Dark Lord on, which is bizarre. Yeah.
It's really gross. It even comes down to a what was she wearing sort of thing. It's like, you showed up in a wedding yeah. dress, you whore. Like, wow. Yeah. He doesn't call her that. But I mean, basically, the tone is there.
No, but yeah, some of the people in the crowd are calling yeah. her a tramp, which is, you know. So it's very, it goes back to that whole thing. Like, would there have been an actual consummation? Because there's the whole emphasis on the witches going to their dark baptism as being pure and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's not even like they call it a breach of contract, breach of promise, but like it's definitely played up like a trial about her being pure and like her right. committing adultery against the devil. It's weird.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's weird and gross. But And then I think Webster's basic argument is that Sabrina never made the promise.
Yeah. And like, well, they bring it up like, oh, look, surprise, she did promise. She was promised as a baby, which is, if that's a thing, it seems that they even really need her to sign, but later they call it ratifying. So I guess it's like a baby baptism and then having to like confirm later.
Right. Sort of, but I don't know. I have unorganized thoughts about that, because as we will find out later, that they accept the actual baptism of Sabrina into the Catholic faith as like a signed done deal. It's not that it was a, you know, promise that she then had to ratify. That was the one where it's like, no, she's already promised. This is done. But somebody else signing her name in the book doesn't count.
Two possibilities, either because that was an actual sacrament, it's just like a different ceremony that's taken differently, but also like I feel like they originally were like, well, then we have competing claims, and Webster's argument is, no, this happened like the day before yours. Too bad you lose.
Right. Right. But even if one happened the day before, you could still argue that there are competing claims. Because the parents both did a different thing. And if both of them had the same weight, then you could still argue that they were competing claims. I'm not saying it would hold up, but you could have a longer fight about it.
Yeah.
If they were equivalent.
It seems like they don't want to draw it out anymore. Like, you made the point that he needs the trial and needs the, like, what, you know, because he was embarrassed. And it's getting to a point where he's been more embarrassed. Like,
right.
This has not gone the way I wanted. Rather than draw it out further and risk that she will actually win, let's compromise.
Right, but it's factually, supposedly, it's the devil who's like, geez, let's just, guys, you're screwing this up. This is not how I wanted this to go. And I'm just curious as to when they had to go down into the lower chambers of the court and everything, like, was it the weird, gross goat demon guy? Or were they just, like, was it just Blackwood and Webster hashing it out? Pretend, you know, like, the whole summoning Satan. Listen, the devil has summoned us below. We're just going to go down here, have
There's
a couple
a
of brandies.
There's a goat puppet on Blackwood's hand, and he just fills in the...
Well, the Dark Lord said... Oh...
Oh, these are scenes we need, guys.
Little outtakes, behind the scenes stuff. It's just Blackwood. It would be funny if it was in like the Charlie Brown adult voice, so yes. Nobody can understand it. Blackwood's like, well, he says. Oh. Okay. But back to this is that we found out that the signature was from Edward signing her over because that was the price he had to pay to get to marry Diana.
Yep.
And I just question, why would you sign over your firstborn child just to marry somebody?
I'm feeling like there's stuff we're missing, and I'm thinking that, like, signing up his firstborn child was like the plan, and that Mary, like, I think there's something to his like collecting mortals, and that he's kind of trying to like diversify the lineage, or like, you know, spread out their influence a little. And I think, like, we've talked about it maybe being significant that Sabrina's half witch, and I think it's not even so much that he wanted to marry Diana specifically as that marrying a mortal woman was part of his plans. And also maybe he really loves Diana, but we don't know.
Maybe. I mean, I think this is a very different Edward from the one that's in the comic books, because that one is a tool. But I don't know. It's just the emphasis on this is the price I had to pay. But he could have just had a kid with her anyway without marrying her. And kept the kid? The whole, he wanted to marry her so he had to summon Satan and do this whole deal thing is just weird to me. Unless there's some sort of a purpose behind the actual marriage and it being specifically Diana, whether that's because he was in love with her or because there's something special about her. I don't know.
Well, there's, you say he could have just had a kid with her, but they're so down on that. Like, her being a half-witch is a really big deal. And we talk, I think we've talked about that. That might be why she couldn't go to the school like everyone else did and winds up in a mortal school not knowing anything about her religion. So if he just had her, they might have actually killed her. Like, it's possible that the only way he could have had a child with her is to by promising that that child will be one of theirs.
But he could have had the kid with her and promised to have, like, and taken the kid and raised her as a witch to diversify the field. And it wouldn't have mattered that she was a half-witch if they just didn't tell her. Like, I understand what you're saying is that there would have been a stigma to it. And maybe there had to be permission to even have, like, for him to get Diana pregnant. I'm assuming that's where we're going here. Is that there had to be something just because he was having a relationship with a mortal, I guess. And that's fair. I don't know. It's just, it bothers me. It sticks in my brain.
Yeah, no, I get that. I'm just feeling like putting the name down, I think, would have happened anyway. Like, I don't think the marriage is so much the thing. It's allowing Sabrina to exist. I would assume probably would have had to have him signing her away in the same way. But that's just my theory.
Right. And we don't know if that's just something that all witch parents do, is they sign their kid up and then the kid, like you said earlier, it's a baptism and then it is the confirmation later. But you know what would have been real useful for Sabrina is if that was common practice, if her aunts told her, you know?
I mean, even if it's not common practice, like, they spring so much on her. And then, like, okay, we kind of maybe skipped over it, or maybe, no, yeah, okay. When they tell her they get the summons, Zelda's, like, holding back tears. She's not very much an emotional person. And she's, like, clearly not wanting to yell at Sabrina for this, and Sabrina didn't know. But, like, the fact that Sabrina's actions have put them all at risk, I mean, that they're aging and dying. Like, those would be helpful things to tell your kid. That, like, by the way witch law works, if you don't do this, we'll be punished too. And then Sabrina would have definitely done it, I feel like. Just, like, out of guilt. And
I mean, I don't know if the aunts even, they should have probably, because they know the kind of people that they hang out with, but anticipated that they too would be sued, or that there would be a suit. But it also would have been great if your whole purpose is to get Sabrina to this one point, to have her sign the book, is to raise her as a witch and let her know what's going on. Because it was really just the surprise of all of this stuff that I feel knocked her off, her, you know, off the orbit and made her run away, is because she thought she was getting one thing and she didn't understand what was going on. So maybe you just don't drop all of this into the lap of a 16-year-old who you've let run around with Roz for all of her life, because Roz has opinions about, you know, free will and stuff, and Roz is right.
Yep.
But that's none of my business. So this whole thing could have been avoided and we would have had
True.
No TV
okay.
show.
Yeah.
Okay. But.
Bad parenting makes good TV.
So then we I guess to a certain degree, it's just, I expected better of Zelda and Hilda. And I don't know why. And then do we go back to Daniel Webster's house?
Yeah, that's the next note I have.
And it's his dead daughter. Or probably Madame Satan, I'm guessing.
He's kind of looking at... I think he was looking at clippings about his previous law thing, and maybe, like, at her picture when he decided to help Sabrina, because it was like, you know, it kind of implied, like, oh, I wish someone would have helped me and saved my kid, blah, blah, blah. And then his kid shows up and is like, why are you doing this?
Listen. He was definitely... Oh, excuse me. He was definitely looking at a picture of her. And like when her ghost showed up with the whole slit throat and everything. And we find out later on that he made the whole deal and everything to be the greatest lawyer of all time. And if you know enough to summon Satan in order to make a deal, you kind of have to know it's not going to go your way in the end. Like, he's not known for his generosity of spirit. So, again, this is not an excuse for his daughter getting murdered. That's horrible. But you'd think he would have noticed that this was a bad deal. Well, maybe just a real crappy lawyer before that. I don't know.
Yeah, possible. But I mean, Edward introduced him to it, and like, grand, like all of the witches basically make this deal, and in exchange for it, get long life and everything. And it doesn't seem to always go badly for them. And like, actually, late in the episode, when Hilda's completely justifiably excommunicated, she looks terrified, even though she doesn't like being part of the Church of Night. And it makes me think that you're under, like, you now know what, like, dark forces are at work in the world, and you have an amount of protection if you sign up with the devil. So, and if you lose that protection, then it's scary. So I feel like it's fair that Daniel Webster would have thought that he would be protected and that this was a perfectly reasonable deal to make. After all, Edward was, like, probably a century old at that point and looking like he's 30.
Right, but Webster didn't make a deal to look hot for forever. He made a deal to be the greatest lawyer of all time. Mm-hmm. And it's, they mentioned the monkey's paw at one point in here, like the story of the monkey's paw. Not in this episode, but at some point.
I feel like it's in the comic, but yeah, maybe. Same writers, so.
But you kind of have to, like, in a world where that story exists, it should occur to you at some point that this might be too good to be true. Yeah, okay, the witches all look fine and everything, but they routinely eat people, I believe. And you don't know what's going to happen. Like, it just, maybe it's just my own personal, you know, prejudices here. It's like, it just seems like a real bad idea, and you should know that that's a terrible idea and not do it. Because
I think he says at one point later when he's explaining this to Sabrina that he realized at some point he was defending terrible people.
Yes.
I don't know how long it took him to realize that.
Long enough for him to build up a career as being like a super lawyer. So a while. I think he was high. I think it was like a drug. You know, he was high on the fact that he was winning all these cases and probably making a butt ton of money. And being famous. And so he was cool with it until it occurred to him that, hey, I have never defended an actually innocent person. These are all terrible murderers that I'm getting off and letting free.
Yep.
But back to the thing. I'm not sure that's actually his daughter's ghost.
No. I think at the end of, like, in that scene, like, as soon as he turns his back and is all weepy, she transforms into Madame Satan.
Does she actually transform into Madame Satan?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, I wrote it down, okay. That, like, confirmation that she uses illusions to manipulate people. So, Yeah.
I missed that part, because I suspected it was Madame Satan, but I don't remember her actually transforming. So, okay. I'm okay with that. And so, then we're back to Harvey in the mines?
Yep. And he tells a story about this crazy thing that happened when he was a kid. That no one's going to believe, yeah. Except it was seeing the devil in the mines, and of course Sabrina knows it's true.
Yeah. And she can't tell him that, but, you know, you can see her going, no, that was definitely Satan. He also shows up at the school, like, occasionally, so there's nowhere to be safe. Yeah. But yeah, okay, back to Harvey.
He mentions a smell at some point, and Sabrina's like, oh, brimstone! Which is a very odd response, but, you know. Right. Life, it's fine. It's as close as comes to being like, yes, I know what you're talking about. You're not completely out of your mind here.
I too have been personally victimized by the devil. Yeah, and it's the whole Harvey's just sweetly oblivious to everything, because if he notices, then, you know, we're going to have a problem. So he's just like, yeah, no, that's cool that my girlfriend has a real specific understanding of what brimstone smells like.
Yep.
Glad he believes me. And in fairness, this is a trauma that he thought nobody was ever going to believe, so he's probably just feels good that she's not just looking at him and slowly backing away like he's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, so. But keep this in mind. Okay, so, like, at whatever episode, she tells Harvey that she's a witch and then erases his memory and he freaks out. That seemed super and unjustified at the time. But, like, if he's got this hang-up about, like, a devil-like figure he saw, and but he might have this fear of anything that's sort of outside what he expects, this is, like, if he makes those connections at all, there's a little bit more justification for the way he freaks out on her.
Sure.
Maybe.
Although, I guess, the freak out is still weird because I could go up to anybody and tell them that I'm a witch, you know, and even in that world, I would think that most people would just be like, oh, okay, cool. You mean like a Wiccan, like a witch, and not automatically freak out like you eat babies.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there are some people, you know, like, but for the most part, it would just be like, okay, that's a thing, and move on with it. He's still freaked out pretty hard without her actually showing off any magical abilities.
Or mentioning that she was, you know, getting baptized and marrying the devil. Like, there was no reason that I can remember for him to make that connection. It's just like, okay, he does have some experience with the spooky.
And in, again, in fairness, I have never come face to face with a demon, so he probably, maybe that just left scars. And he just won't. But he goes to Dr. Cerberus's all the time, and the name itself.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, he also draws a lot of, like, I don't remember, like, looking at what his drawings are, but stuff that his brother's like, man, you're twisted. It's good, but you're twisted. So, like, that might be kind of how he processes. Like, he definitely didn't, like, swear off all sorts of horror monster stuff. He goes to the zombie movie with them. But,
right. So, but he also doesn't seem to, I don't know, maybe it's one of those, like, it terrifies him, so he just goes to safe, terrifying things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, anyway, again, he did come face to face with a demon, so we'll let it go. But, alright. So then, is it Roz and Wicca?
They're back at school. Like, they just arrive at the school. I think this is out at the end of the same walk. And Miss Wardwell comes up, and she's wearing the cutest dress. And she puts her arm around her, and she's like, you're not going to believe what they did. And she spells out what the WICCA did. That's Wicca to you, Mr. Kinkle. Like, and everyone. Like, it's a weird thing to say, but whatever. If you forgot what this was, when she says Wicca did this, we're going to spell it out for you so you know that we mean not the religion, but this kid's cool girl.
Right. Yes. And I wondered if she thought maybe Harvey couldn't spell.
Possible.
Like, I don't know what his English grades are, but he made it to high school, so I'm assuming he's fine. Yeah. But... And then Principal Hawthorne's like, listen, but I took it. It's going up before the board for review. I didn't just ignore you, which is a surprise, honestly.
You know.
But that's where we get that it's not going to happen for like 2 months, which will be.
Yeah, and it's also a parallel scene. Like, yeah, they're passing out the flyers and going behind his back, but then they're like, it's not a crime to pass out flyers. He's like, no, I was just going to tell you that I interceded on your behalf, and they're going to have a meeting about it. Which is kind of the same scene that happens later, when Blackwood shows up and is like, I interceded on your behalf, and the devil has a compromise for you. That's basically exactly what we want, but I'll say it's for you.
It's less of a compromise and more of a, here's our argument yet again.
Yep.
But, yeah. No, yeah, that is true. That is the whole overbearing men claiming that they're giving you what you want while not doing that.
Yep. This is a good show about patriarchy things. Just barely disguised.
How terrible they are. Yes, it is. No, it's definitely disguised. No one will notice. It's fine. And then we have Madam Satan making the little scrapbook for Sabrina to find.
I think that's the next scene. This is where then we have the funeral, and Connor, funeral. Luke's or not, Ambrose is standing by the casket, which I guess that's a thing mortuary people do. I don't go to a lot of funerals. Good, you know. Yeah. But he sees Luke at the back and is just like makes a beeline for him, and it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But they have a conversation, and when Luke says, "Yeah, we dated a little bit," Ambrose smiles. He's like, "I'm sorry for your loss. Also, there's a lizard in my bedroom. Come look." it's so not appropriate. And it's broken up by the mom letting out a sob at the front of the thing. And, like, you know, probably not the best time.
They say that funerals make people want to reaffirm life. And Ambrose has been stuck in the funeral home for a real long time.
It's true.
But I also, not to put the kibosh on Ambrose, you know, getting jiggy with it is the only thing that comes to mind, so please excuse my everything. But I also think he's also like, I have his lizard, so maybe you want to see it? I know, there's no way that this doesn't sound dirty, but... Like, legitimately, Ambrose is also interested in trying to solve this mystery, so maybe he just... He definitely didn't just mean the lizard thing, but I'm trying.
Well, okay. So, aside from that, they have this whole weird coded conversations where somehow Luke lets on that he knows... Like, he said the iguana follows him around. He's like, are you saying you're familiar with lizards like that? And Luke's like, they have a bond. Yeah. And it's... The whole thing's super suspicious. I'm fully convinced at this point on the rewatch that Luke was sent there. Maybe didn't even know or date Connor, but knows that Ambrose is here and, like, has noticed the witch spot and stuff and has been sent after Ambrose. Yeah. And even if that wasn't the case, like, if you were in the witch world, you know who the Spellmans are. You know the name because of Edward. You don't have to have a coded conversation about it. You'd be like, oh, you're Edward's cousin, and you're a witch too. Cool, let's talk.
Right.
So the whole thing's suspicious. No. This is the one point where Ambrose's head is not on his shoulders because he's thinking with another like part of his body. And it's bad. But they're cute, so I'm okay with it.
No, this is... Luke is definitely very suspicious as a character, and I hate it because Ambrose deserves better. You know?
Yep.
But it's like Luke was purposefully picked to distract Ambrose.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's a problem, but that's fine. Because he does grow on me later when he's no longer so much of a problem. Although he's probably still up to some stuff. All right. So we get Ambrose flirting terribly. Sort of. He knows he's probably
and then
a little
we're
bit
back
out
at the school where she's doing
and then we're back booking. At school. Yep, and I think was she humming? I thought I recognized the song, but is it "Hush, Little Baby"?
Oh, maybe I didn't recognize the song, but that would something like that. She was humming while she scrapbooks, and it was very. She's so good at this. I want a Christine McConnell, Madam Satan spinoff show.
Maybe after the very end where she's defeated everyone and is now the queen of hell.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Or she decides, like, Lucifer, screw it, and abandons hell and stays up here and does, I don't know, Lucifer started a nightclub. I don't know what she was going to do, but something good. Down with the patriarchy clubs.
Yes.
So she is cast, well, she's making the scrap. And she casts a spell, and then Sabrina sees the dead daughter, in quotes, leading her to the scrapbook. And, you know, it's the whole, he's the defender of the damned, and all these terrible people he let loose, which, aside from the fact that he made a deal with the devil, like, if you're a defense attorney, that's sort of what you do. I mean, not necessarily they're all terrible people, but you defend people because everybody deserves a defense.
Yep. And there's also that, like, Sabrina's family certainly isn't innocent. Like, having made some mistakes doesn't mean that you never do anything good or that your motives are automatically suspect.
Right.
And also, he didn't come to her. She went to him. So.
Right. She's very judgy of him for this.
But also, Madam Satan does a thing here. Like, so far in this episode, we've seen her disguise herself as something else and completely, like, just become a shadow and hide until Blackwood's like, I don't like being watched. Here, she's standing as herself, fully visible, peeking from behind some library shelves. And it's amazing.
You gotta mix it up a little bit. Sometimes just some straight up regular old creeping is all that's required. And then we get to see, you know, her cute little smile as, you know, her plan comes into fruition. So we wouldn't get that if she was just a weird shadow
version.
That's
true. That's a good reason, I'm convinced.
Yeah.
I mean, more of Michelle Gomez actually on screen is always a good thing. So
always good. Yes. So then we get her, you know, Sabrina running to Webster and throwing out that he lived a life before she knew him and he's not perfect. And my note there is just basically, Sabrina, your aunts eat people, so maybe calm down. And we get the whole thing about him making a deal with the devil to be the greatest lawyer in the world, and of course that he's unbeatable, but he defends monsters.
Yep.
Which, I know we went over before, and it's like, on the one hand, I still feel like you should have gone into that with a little bit more caution. Maybe he was just a real terrible lawyer. On the other hand, even a normal lawyer is going to defend terrible people sometimes if you're a defense attorney. So, I don't know. I don't feel super bad about this, except for the fact that his daughter got murdered.
Yeah. Like, even if you don't feel super bad for him, like, okay, so she didn't do anything, but now she's dead because he got somebody off the hook for terrible, terrible crimes, and then that guy was like, hey, thanks, let me do those things to your kid. So, what?
But it's another one of those, the fridging of the daughter, because, you know, we can't have this guy have female characters in his life without something terrible happening to him, so we can use that as an impetus for him to change his whole life around and become a better person.
That's true. And like, okay, so it's a horrible thing anyway. I'm not saying bad things should happen to different people, but like, this, now that you mention it, this like women in refrigerators trope is such a tired thing.
Yeah.
And in like what I expect to be a feminist show that tackles patriarchy themes and everything, do we need to repeat it? Like, A, don't use that trope at all. But if you're going to, would it really have been any different if it was a son, except that it wouldn't be yet another story of women being killed for men's pain? Like,
yeah. You could have had him, the realization that he's defending all these terrible people and they're actually, like guilt hitting him without it being that, oh, it's because his daughter got murdered that he decided to stop and turn his life around. It could have been, you know what? I realize that I have made a terrible deal and that all I am doing is letting out these people to go out and do horrible things again. And I have made a mistake, without it being that he personally murdered someone that I love.
Like, those terrible things could have happened to him. He could have been attacked and like narrowly survived or something, but turned his back on law. There are so many other ways they could have done this, or he could have just grown a conscience like this. Bad choices. They should not have done this particular story.
Yeah,
but they did.
No, but it's another one of those things where it's the easy thing to do, like with the father with the alcoholism and the bad parenting and everything. It's easy, so maybe they're using all of their writing skills for other story parts. I don't know. But yeah, it was a disappointment.
Yes. You know, Nope, it's fine. I don't know how to say it. Like, I had previously, I watch Riverdale. I watched this because of it. I liked his comic work. And I definitely do think Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa and his whole teams are good writers. I've been really impressed with what they do with their shows and how they diverge from other things. But now that we've made all of this, I'm going to be looking for it. And I feel like I'm going to be super disappointed. And maybe, like, they did, like, to make room for the out of nowhere, like, ridiculous things they do that you wouldn't see anywhere else, they take a lot of these shortcuts, I think, is probably what I'm going to see if I start paying more attention to it.
Probably.
Because they got to be lazy somewhere.
That falls back on the whole thing. Right, but it falls back on the whole thing. Can you enjoy something even though it's not perfect? You know what I mean? So yeah, there's imperfections, but it's still overall a really good show. So you just accept it and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, guys. You're not perfect, but I still love you.
Is that not what love
that's
is?
That's a good point. Okay.
So, did we go from there back to, okay, so he tells her his sad story and then she's like, oh, now I have feelings for you because dead daughter. No, it's fine. And then we go back to the trial.
Are we at the trial? And I skipped it. The next one I have is Luke's teleporting into Ambrose's room. Okay. Yeah. So that is before the trial. 'Cause I see my next trial notes. Well, anyway, There's some tapping at the window.
Okay. I think my notes are all out of order then, I think. But okay, so Luke sneaks into the room, which I find he's got the whole, you know, the old school thing of I'm throwing rocks at the window or tapping on it, whichever. And then he's just in the room. So that was fun.
Yeah. I can't tell if he teleported or is astral projecting, but either way, it's kind of weird. But he's there. And
I like to think that he's not astral projecting, given what goes on. So.
Yeah. And there's no birds.
Yeah. There's no birds, and it lasts apparently all night. Yeah. So, yeah. I think he... I don't even know if he teleported like or just broke in.
I mean, it's a business. It might have been open doors. It might be really easy to break into the Spellman house.
I think it's probably pretty easy to break in if you're a witch. And he was invited, so maybe that means that like some of the... Because I assume they have sort of magical protections didn't work because he'd been invited.
Yeah, because like Ambrose did just put up wards, but... As long as Luke doesn't mean him harm, and with, like, you know, a wide definition of harm, because I do still think he's up to something, but it might just be to get him on their side, so.
Right. Or does Luke even know that he means them harm? Because we know that you can mess with people's minds in this. So maybe Luke doesn't know that he's a spy.
They officially both say that they are warlocks, and then start tearing each other's clothes off. And in fiction, and in maybe witches can't get STDs and stuff. So in this context, we're going to move past it. But don't try this at home.
Yeah.
Learn people's last names. Get some tests on. Have conversations.
It fades to black. We don't know. They could have used protection. They could have
just done some intense cuddling. Maybe there was no sex involved at all.
Maybe. You know, or maybe Luke, you know, knocked him over the head so that he could run around the house doing whatever nefarious things he's doing, and Ambrose just thinks that they had a good time. No, I don't like that one. But yeah, generally probably not the smartest thing Ambrose has ever done, but I love him anyway. And
then I think we're at the trial again.
So... Right, because the waking up the next day comes after the trial. Okay. So Webster wants a jury of mortals because Sabrina is half mortal. Which, okay, but she's also half witch. So wouldn't you have to have like a mixed jury?
But then like the witches, like the mortals would have to come in and see like those Sabrina Spellman people. And no.
Yeah. Yeah. They wouldn't be very useful. They'd just be sitting there screaming or running away or trying to beat the crap out of everyone. And so, yeah, that's fair. But he wants a mortal jury and a change of venue because he wants to go to mortal court.
And where the devil would have less influence, mortal humans would be like, holy crap, of course we're not going to send you to the devil. What? So it's an obvious.
Well, and that's assuming... that you could even get it because like 12 normal humans would be like, what is this insanity? What are we here for? And just dismiss this out of hand because 99% of them probably don't believe that the devil is a real thing or that witches are a real thing. So it would just get thrown out for being
dumb.
But then
if they proved it and like, so they're like, oh, okay, we should actually do this and they had a trial, definitely they would all get eaten. So there are moral reasons to be against this.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good plan. It doesn't work. But then, so Blackwood's like, sure, we'll dunk her and look for a witch's mark because, hey, those are the mortal ways we do things. Yep. And after that is when he shows up at the house and is like, hey, you have moved the Dark Lord's heart.
Yep.
So what is it? He's been moved by their plight, which is... hilarious. And he'll waive the punishment in the pit and let her have yearly visits with her friends, but she has to sign her name in the Book of the Beast, go to the Academy of the Unseen Arts. And, you know, he's like, look, am I not generous? Which, like you pointed out, is an echo of the whole thing with Balky earlier. And Webster rightly points out after Blackwood swans off that, you know, this is not what the devil is known for. And then this is a move to be like, hey, I feel like I'm losing control of the situation. Maybe we just end it right here.
There's also an interesting thing where, so like when Blackwood says this deal and like that we're making a compromise, Zelda says praise Satan, which on one level, okay, literally it could be just like, oh, I'm glad he's being reasonable, but it seems more like when people say like, thank God when a solution's found, which has like, you know, I'm so glad God has interceded to save me from God. The whole thing is very weird and like so much obviously not him doing you a favor.
No. But it's also, in fairness to Zelda and Hilda, they are actively dying at this point. I'm not sure how long it would take. They were going pretty fast. Hilda was losing teeth. Zelda was losing hair. It was pretty rough.
That I couldn't figure out what he was doing, even watching this 3 times, where Ambrose is like poking at Hilda's face with a Q-tip, and I couldn't tell if he was applying makeup or if bits of her skin were coming off or something, but it did not look like a pleasant thing.
I thought it was like makeup, but also like maybe there were like sores forming. I don't know why, because if they're aging rapidly and like sort of a Dorian Gray kind of thing where like all the things that should have happened to them given whatever they've been doing with their lives were like sort of popping up here and there. I don't know. There wasn't any evidence for that, but I thought it was makeup to try and cover some sores and some wounds that are showing up because they're aging.
And Zelda, but I love Hilda so much.
Because Hilda... Right, and Hilda doesn't strike me as the kind that's as... not vain, but yeah, vain as Zelda. Like, I don't think she would care as much if just some wrinkles showed up, so.
Yeah. Like, and that's showing, because later when she shows up at the courtroom, she's got teeth falling out and everything. She shows up all bundled up with her hair thing so more doesn't fall out, probably. And she's just still smiling, and she's just so cute. She doesn't care at all what she looks like. She just wants to help.
So, but after this, we get Ambrose waking up and Luke is gone.
The worst alarm clock ever.
And he helpfully carved his phone number into
with
the raptor.
A symbol. Could you tell what that is? I thought it looked like an all-seeing eye mixed with like a Ouija planchette and also kind of like some pictures of Mary I've seen. I'm just like, I feel like this is a symbol of their little subcult, but I can't tell what it's supposed to be. But I'm going to look for it now everywhere.
I couldn't tell exactly. I got pretty much what you got, which was it was the eye and sort of like the triangle, which is almost Masonic, but I couldn't quite figure it out. That's one of those things. The show is darkly shot, even when it's trying to be light, so...
Yeah. And I actually froze the screen and got, like, really close to my computer screen to try and tell, and I still can't. It's still literally, like, it's abstract, whatever it is.
Yeah. And I had it, like, blown up on my TV, pause, like I tried to do with Susie's locker, and I'm like, I can't tell. So, if you're going to do these things, it would be really nice if you could see it. But yeah, so he graffitied Ambrose's poor room, and then the iguana familiar is dead, and you can see the gremlin goblin thing trying to come out of it. Or if it was like halfway shifted back to its form when it died, I don't know.
And Ambrose says, like, I guess you just couldn't live without Connor, which we don't know that that's what happened. It's interesting that he dies right after Luke was there. And I feel like that was not a coincidence because he wasn't like, you would think he would slowly be dying. He was fine last night. And then he's dead.
Well, and you would think it would either be that he's slowly dying or that it happens much more quickly, because at this point, Connor's been dead for a week, maybe? So you would think either, well, I mean, maybe he's been slowly dying this whole time. It's just real convenient that he dies after Luke shows up. And then he's like, I mean, I guess that's normal, because Ambrose doesn't say anything about him being, like, weirdly half-shifted back. But, I don't know. I'm suspicious.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's suspicious. I think he might have been transforming to try and get away or to fight Luke. But whatever the case, he is dead. And therefore, oh, I was interested because Ambrose asked if it's possible to get a familiar, someone else's familiar to talk to you. I feel like maybe it is.
Yeah.
And that they killed the iguana familiar so that he wouldn't tell anything.
Yeah. I mean, and that's fair, but then it brings up the whole, okay. So, if Luke is acting on behalf of someone, everything, that brings up, so who killed Connor? Because I would assume that witch hunters would not be working with witches. And Luke is definitely a witch, a warlock. Yep. So
I definitely think it was witches.
Who killed Connor? And why? Why would they kill him? Unless, I don't know. Unless he found out something.
He decided he didn't want to be part of their creepy witch Watford. Patriarchy. And
I don't know. We don't have enough clues.
I'm going to have all kinds of theories anyway. I'm fully convinced that Blackwood did it. But it's not something that's been proven or even like really substantiated, like any evidence for it, except that I just do not trust Luke and do not trust Blackwood and their whole little group. And so that's what I think happened.
I think it's pretty solidly that we know you can't trust Blackwood. Luke is suspicious as all get out, and we know that he is involved with Blackwood to some degree, because we have later in the show where he brings Blackwood and Ambrose together. So he definitely works with or for Blackwood, so it just makes it worse.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Ambrose, find a new
boyfriend. Definitely suspicious, and I just want to... I mean, in fairness, you know, the dating pool is probably not that great.
People willing to visit you at your creepy mortuary mansion. Small.
Yeah.
And he's a witch criminal, so, like, people who understand the situation maybe don't want to be involved with him.
Right. They're like, yeah, you know, you're not really accepted in society anymore, and you're cute, but...
Yeah.
That's sad.
And then, okay, so, I think this is the wood scene where she, like, strips and has him look for a witch spot.
Yes. Which I hated.
Why did you hate it?
Because you have two aunts, and you have Ambrose. You have Salem, who we know at least talks to her sometimes. And I guess they're dating, but it's like your brilliant plan is, hey, all we've ever done is kiss and hold hands, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to strip in the woods for you. And if you could just tell me if you see anything weird. Harvey doesn't have any clue what a witch's mark looks like.
He probably saw one and thought, wow, this is an interesting little bruise. That's fine.
That's a cute dimple. And also, again, I know that they're dating, and he was also stripping to be, you know, equality, whatever. But you know what? You look with your eyes, Harvey. You don't need to be looking for it.
He's not looking very hard. Like, it definitely felt like he thought this was maybe a ruse to, like, that she really wanted to have sex. Like, he pulls off his shirt and she looks at him and he's just like, I mean, fair's fair. Definitely wasn't planning to have sex. What? Nope. But... the hairline seems like a really good obvious place where she wouldn't be able to check herself. He doesn't really look, he just sort of runs his hand under her hair. I'm like, that's not looking, Harvey.
No. You know what wouldn't have shown up? Like the 666 on right. Damien's head. It doesn't show up if you touch it. But it's just, one, I can't blame Harvey for thinking that this is just a boyfriend-girlfriend kind of thing where she's like, hey, you know what? I need you to look for this thing. Ha ha ha. Because he has no context for anything else. So I don't blame Harvey for not knowing what's going on.
Until you mentioned Salem, I understood why she went to him instead, because she doesn't really trust her aunts, which I think is unfair. I think she should at least trust Hilda. Salem would have been a good option. And also, this is just a really weird plan.
Well, Salem, Ambrose, I mean, yes, they're cousins and everything, but Ambrose seems pretty chill about this sort of stuff. Also, Roz, Susie, I assume she has other friends. that she could have asked and be like, hey, I thought that I saw a weird, like, mark. Can you help me look for it again? Like, you'd have to make up some sort of excuse that people would still be like, eh, it's a little weird. But they'd help you out. As opposed to your boyfriend who's just like, well, okay. We're going to make out. And again, cannot blame Harvey for that. Because what is he supposed to think? But I do blame Harvey for being like, hey, this is a great excuse. I'm going to look for this witch's mark with my hands. Not that, you know, Sabrina was into it, so it's fine. It's just Harvey. It's okay. But yeah, no, I didn't like that part.
It's a bad scene. It is.
It was dumb all over the place. So, and I guarantee you that she has a witch's mark somewhere and they just didn't find, because what is she going to do? Is she going to take off her bra? Is she going to take off her underwear too?
I mean, okay, so... She can check the front part under her bra, but like I would assume she probably had to at least undo it or tell him to lift it up or something to look at her back. Because, yeah.
Yeah. You know what else she could have done? She could have stood in front of a full length mirror and looked over her shoulder.
You're not wrong.
Is he checking like the bottoms of her feet between her like?
There's a limited number of places you can't see yourself, and one of the biggest ones is your neckline, and that is where he should have looked, and definitely did not.
And been like, nope, there's definitely nothing weird here. I can't feel the little devil's horn insignia that's, you know, tattooed to your skin under your hairline, but I didn't see it. Anyway. I hated it a lot, but it's fine. moving on. And if that was an excuse for Sabrina to, like, make out with her boyfriend, then fine. But it doesn't solve any problems. Okay. So, Harvey fails to find the thing he definitely wasn't looking for at all.
Yes. Go figure.
And, yep, it was a surprise of the ages. Actual universe Harvey is just wandering around somewhere else going, huh, you know what? I feel a disturbance in the force. Someone was just real dumb.
Yep.
So, and then we're back to the school where we find out about Roz, like the full story about Roz. Well, the full story.
The committee came back and she can read that book for school in 3 months. Which is where she reveals that that's too long, because by then she won't be able to read it with her eyes. But again, audiobooks and Braille are things.
Right. And I get, like, learning Braille, that would take time. I'm not great with other languages. I've tried to learn Spanish, like, 15 times. So I get that learning Braille would probably be a bit daunting, but you could do it, Roz. You're very smart. And audiobooks are a thing. Or you could know what? You could have your friend, any of them, Susie, sit there and read you the book.
I would love scenes of Susie reading to Roz.
Because they would. Susie would definitely read for Roz, and it would be so sweet.
It takes time to learn Braille, but that's time, like, you could take advantage of being able to read alongside, like, read with your eyes while you're reading with your fingers, get very much used to the letters now when you know it's coming, as opposed to trying to read everything you possibly can as if you'll never be able to read again in 3 months.
It's like, did you ever watch the Twilight Zone, like, the old Twilight Zone, the original stuff? There was a one episode where, like, the world ends and it's just this one guy left and he's like, finally time to read all my books. And then his glasses break. You know what the solution to that is, dude? Bring the book closer to your face. Like, there are options. But anyway, yeah. So I do, it's again, I feel sorry for Roz because she's going blind and she's young, and I get that there's, I assume that there's panic. I've never been in that sort of a situation where it's like, listen, this thing is happening and you can't do anything about it. And it's going to change your life entirely. But I also sort of feel like her parents are maybe not the most helpful with this. Give some of the stuff that said, not that they're bad, but like, I don't know if we find it's here or later. We find out her dad is basically just like, you know, you just got to have faith. and it will avoid, like, somehow having faith will keep you from going blind. Which is pretty shitty.
Yeah. I don't want to skip ahead, sorry, too much, but, like, he does, and then we find out it's a family thing, and she has other blind family members, like, a lot of them. And so I just feel like, I feel like I'm being harsh, too, and, like, talking about experience I don't have, but I do have other disabilities, and I'm used to accommodation being a thing. And I feel like instead of only talking to her dad, who's like, have faith, you'll be able to figure it out, talk to her blind relatives who can tell her how they do their life and have a less doom and gloom attitude about it all, where it's not trying to stop this thing that's happening to you, but learning to adapt to it.
And that's fair, and I think that in a better, more balanced sort of representation of this, we would have that, where even though, you know, you've got her father, and I assume her mother also being like, listen, you just gotta have faith, you gotta trust in the Lord that, you know, that this is not gonna happen, which is, again, a load of hogwash. But that, like, we would also get her talking to, I mean, we do eventually see her talking to her grandma, but that's a whole other problem, and we'll get to that. Not a problem, but it's a whole separate set of issues that we find out about. But it's, she's just basically left with, you don't have enough faith, you're going blind, and you're not going to get to do the thing that you love the most without being, and I don't know, like, now I'm wondering, like, are her parents just being like, listen, if you just pray harder, you won't have to worry about any of this stuff, and not encouraging her to look for other solutions to, hey, you know, you're going to lose your sight and you need to learn how to accommodate this. Because I suspect that they may not be the most enthusiastic about this, which I don't get that. I don't get that in reality either, where people are just like, listen, if you could just pray harder, you won't be sick anymore. Like, that's not how it works. And it's just very, it's frustrating. I don't understand that mentality. So
me either.
Because how many kids die because their parents are like, well, you know, you just got to pray and your diabetes won't exist. Wasn't that a thing? That was a thing where some kids died.
Yeah.
It's just dumb. Anyway. Okay. Pointless rant over.
I mean, not pointless. I feel like that is one of the things that this show is good at and why I want to do a podcast like this, because a lot of things like that that are in the mainstream religion, we just sort of accept without too much criticism. Like, I didn't grow up with people who thought you could actually pray away cancer, but they would still say, like, they would pray that cancer would be healed and think that that does something. And you still see posts on Facebook, things today saying, like, you know, like and share this to send up a prayer or something, you know, like, just, and we, like, even if you kind of see that and like, oh my gosh, that's dumb, and we go past it, you don't criticize it too much. And then when you see it spelled out like this, with just like the unhelpful, complete denial and like not helping people because you just want to tell them to pray harder, and seeing how useless that is in a fictional, like, religious context, it kind of shines a light on it that we've just learned to ignore.
It does, but I think there's also different levels of it. Like, so I think, in my experience at least, most of the people who post those little, you know, like and share and thoughts and prayers are with you or whatever, well, whilst those are useless things to do, where you post those, you know what I mean? It doesn't do anything. It also, I don't think most of those people are like, well, you have cancer, so you should just pray real hard. That's like a certain subsection. Right. Of the religion that does that. Like, I had a friend who, just an older woman that I grew up with and everything, and she got lung cancer. And she was very religious, and it was all asking for prayers, but she also was going to oncologists and was getting treatment and everything. And it was the prayers, whether you believe that helps or anything, it wasn't like that was her only thing she was doing. She was also going to doctors. So I think there's, whether you believe it helps, there's the majority of it doesn't hurt anything either. Or what is that old story about the people that are, the house is flooding?
Yeah.
And they're up on the roof of the house. and there's a boat and a helicopter and everything, and then and they turn everything away because God is going to save them. And then when they die, God's like, listen, I sent you a boat and a helicopter and everything. What else did you want me to do? Like, you pray is great, but also you've got to be, like, actually actively doing something. I think that's what most people do. And not the, we will just pray away whatever is wrong with you. So, I think her Roz's parents represent a very narrow subset.
I think I don't remember what Roz's dad actually says. I feel like maybe there's a scene where he actually specifically said, like, that's how she interprets it. And he says, like, no, no, that's not what I meant. Like, this isn't your fault, blah, blah, blah. But I don't remember the details. That's in, like, the next episode or two. So I don't want to, like, say that he's doing this thing. But this is the message she's getting, I think. And she does, like, especially through like influence, the next episode is going to be feeling like this is her fault, and it's like just saying clearly it is not, and that's a really harmful religious attitude to have, that you're being punished for not being faithful enough.
It is, but I also think I do, and again, this is in one of the next couple of episodes, so maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but I do think that I remember him saying, you know, something about her grandmother and about her grandmother not having enough faith and turning away from Christianity, something along those lines, and that's why she went blind. And maybe I'm remembering it wrong. We'll get to that. Yeah. But that's how I sort of, and I thought, well, that's very, not that they're victims because they're blind, but almost victim blaming. Like, you didn't try hard enough. What were you doing when you went blind that made you go blind? You know? So hopefully I'm wrong and he's not like that. That would be great. But we will find out. Okay. So then we're at Harvey going to work.
These scenes are really painful to me since we know what happens to Tommy. And he just is like, he's the best parent right now. And he's not a parent, but he's just so nice to Harvey. And I love him and I miss him already. Spoilers.
Right. And I too love Tommy and I'm sad. Knowing what happens to Tommy, it makes these scenes very difficult. But I also think it's sort of indicative of this is what happens a lot of times in a family where you have an older sibling and you have parents who are not good parents. They're not able to parent for whatever reason. Is that you have the older sibling doing what they can to save the younger sibling from whatever. And feeling like they're the parent. And Tommy is very good at it, and I miss him.
So Harvey's supposed to do his day at the mines, and he can't, because he just has, like, a full anxiety attack at the front of it. And Tommy's, like, realizes, as he's telling him everything's fine, we'll get you home, you only have to do a day of this, realizes that Harvey cannot do a day of this. And he sends him home, and is just like, fine, it's fine, we'll figure out Dad later, just go home. And, oh, sweetie.
Yeah. Yeah. Tommy is a good brother. Because he can't, Tommy in no way can know or believe that, you know, there's a demon down there. Because Tommy's been working down there. His father works down there. Although that does, okay. So, I mean, we find out various things later about the mines and everything. But I wonder if the father working in the mines has something to do with his general terribleness. Like proximity to, as we find out, that, you know, there was a demon down there. And not to excuse, because other people work down there too, but maybe.
That's a really good point. And it just reminds me, like,
I don't know.
Prudence, maybe. When they get the boys down there, talks about it being the devil's lair and that we're closer to him. Like, Harvey's dad's been working down there near the devil and with that specific demon that shows up later for years, and since he was Harvey's age, and that does make a lot of sense, that that's just like messed with who he is, and
and it could be, and you know, and you don't know, did he see, I feel like it's almost making excuses for him being an alcoholic and the way that he behaves. And I don't want to do that, but then you wonder if it was running, if that specific demon was running around down there until, you know, then could he have seen something? Could he have seen things? And, you know, you try to cope with that and you turn to alcohol or whatever. Yeah. And then you have an addiction problem. Yeah. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm trying to find ways to not think he's such a terrible person.
Like, he's still a terrible person, but that's a really good point. And, okay, on the other hand, how has Tommy managed to be such a good person? But maybe Tommy hasn't seen anything yet. And, you know, a long time of influence. Maybe Harvey's dad started out like Tommy. And if there's this, like, thing under Greendale that kind of twists people and... I don't read a whole lot of Batman comics, but I read like some tangential ones like Batgirl and Mother Panic, and something that they were doing recently is that Gotham actually twists people's minds and makes them bad. And I feel like once you said that, like I feel like that could be true of Greendale, and especially if you get closer and closer to the Devil's areas.
Well, and to think about Tommy is that, one, he hasn't been at it as long as his father, because he's obviously younger than his father, which, you know. But also, if, let's say that there was that one specific demon really running around like amok in those tunnels for whatever reason, spoilers for later, he's not there anymore. So maybe, yeah, you're still closer to hell or whatever, and there's something down in the mines, but like there's not specifically like an actual demon running around poking people at the moment. So, but that's sort of the Gotham thing. I've been keeping up with that a little bit, but also it's been said somewhere before, because of all the chemicals and everything, that it sort of twists the people of Gotham too, because even before the Joker is all this stuff, but like fear gas and the Joker venom and everything, and it's just sort of making Gotham weirder and weirder. So, sort of like a hellmouth, but with chemicals. Yeah. So, yeah, Tommy is a good brother, and we will miss him being so good. Eventually. Okay. So, he goes home, and then I think we go to Sabrina saying that she's not going to take the deal.
And she storms out of the house, and Hilda, like, slams her hand on the table, and it says, like, things just keep getting worse for her, and storms up the stairs saying that Zelda's not the only one with secrets, and she's so upset and so ready to jump in and save her, and I love how much strong she feels about it.
But, again, we've gone back to this, Sabrina is sure that she doesn't have a witch's mark, even though Harvey definitely wasn't looking for one. And then Zelda is so offended for Sabrina's dignity that she's going to be stripped in front of all of these people to look for the witch's mark, which, I mean, I appreciate that Zelda is concerned about her niece and everything, but she also showed up to the Black Baptism and got stripped into her slip.
Yep.
It covers a little bit more, but you weren't concerned for it then.
No, you're right. It's gross, and it was a thing I noted as weird then and kind of creepy that this like ceremony involved her being stripped. But there is a difference, and like the way this was like brought up as the solution, like fine, if you want to call her a human, either we'll crush her to death or drown her or whatever, or we'll basically sexually assault her in front of everyone.
Right, and humiliate her. And I appreciate Zelda being like, listen, this is not what we're doing, but...
I feel, no, you're right about, like, I get that, I'm just thinking, what I think she's reacting to is it's not even the nudity or the, you know, like, that part of it, as that it was clearly a sort of misogynistic, sexual assault-y punishment being given before the trial, and...
We're gonna kill you. Yeah. No, it's terrible, and, I mean, I guess the difference is basically that the one ceremony is meant to be whatever version of loving and accepting, and this is just flat out a punishment and to humiliate her.
Yes.
So, I guess I can see the difference
anyway.
There.
I have problems with that. At some point, I'll probably wind up talking about my terrible experience in this class where we had to watch a movie that involved someone being, like, actually strip searched and stuff. But... So it's this particularly bad scene for me, and I definitely feel for Zelda that this is an extra level of not okay. Like, it was traumatizing for me to think about, so I didn't want to see it done at all.
Right.
And it is definitely on a different level than being stripped to a slip.
Well, but, and you know what? It's but also it's think about it. No. But if you think about it too, I think maybe the stupid scene with Harvey earlier is meant as less of a "Hey, this is a brilliant plan" and more of a contrast. Now, we never get the scene where Sabrina is stripped, thankfully. Yes. But it's the one scene with Harvey is her stripping down in what she knows is a safe space.
Yes.
She's okay with it. She loves and trusts Harvey and everything. And this is, there's dignity, and this is, in spite of the stupidity of all of it. But contrast with this concept of we're doing the same thing, but it's going to be awful because it's going to be all these adult figures who are thinking terrible things about you and just basically treating this as a humiliating, sexualized punishment for a teenage girl.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that before. Okay, I hate that scene a little bit less now. It's still stupid, but I can take it on that.
They go away because Hilda says she'll be there and just, like, you know, stall long enough or whatever. She's like, I will be there. Yeah. And
I'll be there. Yep.
She goes upstairs, opens this trunk that has, like, I think the first way she opens it up, there's a creepy book with a human ear and cheek stapled to the front of the cover. Okay.
Yep.
But it's a trick trunk, and it probably put there so that people be grossed out and not want to touch it. She closes it again, and it's a secret trunk with baby things. Aww.
Right. Made funnier by the fact that she shares a room with Zelda, so reasonably, the only person she should expect to be going through her stuff is Zelda.
Who would not be at all creeped out by the human ear and she skin book. She'd be like, oh, let's see what secret spells you've written in this or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. But it would be maybe enough to distract her from trying to open the trunk, you know, in another secret way. She'd just be like, oh, yeah, this is normal. Human ear book. So, the baby book would have freaked her out.
Yeah. Especially since, if she opened it, she would find out that Sabrina was baptized a day before in a Catholic church, the day before Edward signed her name.
And Hilda was there to help.
Yep.
Because Hilda is great. I do appreciate Hilda and her just determination to do the best that she can for Sabrina and everybody.
Yeah.
So, we get, so she's got the baby book, but then I think we go back to Harvey at home. Like, we don't get the whole trial yet.
Right. We do go back, and Harvey's dad predictably gets furious, and Tommy steps in and is like, no, he's not working in a mine. He's not going to waste his life, like, dot, dot, dot. And then Harvey's dad's embarrassed and runs away, because this clearly means like you.
Yeah. Yep. And that's, you know what? He's not wrong. I mean, it would be different if he wasn't so terrible.
Yeah.
But, and also I think maybe a little bit of Tommy meaning like me, because I don't think that Tommy sees a different life for himself either. He's in the mines. He's going to work the mines. And I sure imagines that that's just going to be his life, but he wants better for his brother.
So I remember there's a thing about he had like a college acceptance letter. Was that a current one that he was planning to leave within the next year?
No.
Or was that he gave it up to take care of Harvey?
Maybe. I forgot about that letter because it only comes out later. Oh, okay. You're right, though. There was a letter. But I don't remember what the timing was. We'll have to...
We talk about that when we get there. Yeah.
Yeah. But I had forgotten about the letter. Okay.
So this maybe also thoughts he's having about himself, that he's like, currently he is wasting his life, but he doesn't plan to be doing it forever. And he wants, for sure,
maybe,
Harvey, but hopefully both of them to get out.
Yes. Yeah, I can agree to that. Okay, so then we're at the trial, and Blackwood and Webster are arguing about doing the examination in closed quarters.
Yeah.
And Fox is, of course, like, no, we can't do that. That would be terrible.
Yep, because that would, like...
Oh, because he's worse. Yes.
So, yeah, Sabrina, I'm glad it was equal levels of offense when Hilda, like, shows up and boom, surprise, we baptized her. Sabrina isn't like, yeah. Oh, well, that's perfectly fine. Then I'm so glad that happened. She says that they're both deceivers then, and does not like yeah. that her soul was promised to two separate entities before she had any knowledge. Without...
Yeah. Well, and I feel bad for Sabrina, aside from this whole, like, everybody's trying to sell her soul to different parties, is that, like, her aunts, who are all that she has, really, you know, growing up and everything, they've both been keeping secrets from her for her whole life. And that's, yeah, that's just got to be disconcerting, because she's found out that the thing she was aiming for her whole life is also not what she expected it to be. And now she finds out that both of the aunts have been lying to her. And who else has been lying to her?
It's not good.
So, no, but I also, I did like that it wasn't just a, oh, well, that's okay because it's the church. It was that, no, both are terrible. You both lied to me.
Yeah.
But, and then we get to the whole thing where Webster says that the baptism of Sabrina is a binding contract, whereas the signature from Edward and Zelda with the witness is just superseded by this fact. And I don't know, I still don't know if it's because the baptism happened a day earlier, or if it's because it's viewed differently.
In some churches,
you're baptized and you're a full member of that church, whatever age you are. Yeah, and in others, you know, you go through the confirmation and everything like that, but you're still considered a member of the church. But in the Church of Night, it seems like until you're old enough to sign your own name, you're not. So I don't know if that's part of the difference.
Well, so here's a couple things. I think that because, like, at first Faustus was saying it was competing, and the point Daniel made was that, yeah. No, this came earlier, so this is the one that counts. But I also think maybe, A, that's the excuse he's giving them to be, like, to just let it go. And B, whether, yeah. regardless of what baptism actually means in the Catholic Church, which I don't know, like, I'm guessing yeah. they also wouldn't know. And so if they're like, maybe there's a concern there on Blackwood's part that if they look into this any further, they'll find out that that was a full baptism and that she is a full member of the Catholic Church. So best just not to look into it at all. Not to get into a fight with the false god about who owns her soul. Let's right, just right. share and let her make her own decision.
Right. We'll just let this one fly under the radar. We won't bring attention to it. No, that's fair. All right, because it's like you can only be Catholics. You can only be baptized once. So it whatever effects it has those effects for forever. However you want to think about it. So that is as far as the Catholics are. She's been baptized. She's been baptized Catholic. She's sort of like. She's sort of a lay, like, low member of the church thing. She doesn't know what she's doing, but then again, nobody taught her what she was doing with the church tonight anyway. So, they would, like, if she decided to become Catholic, they wouldn't baptize her again.
Okay.
It's just the initial, however you want to put it, the washing away, not the washing away, but, like, the covering of original sin and stuff like that. So, technically that would already be covered for her.
Cool.
So it doesn't cover the sins that she's committed since then, but she's also not Catholic, so anyway. I don't know
about that, that I just don't even know where to start. So. What does baptism do for a Catholic? Like, if she had gotten baptized, well, she did. She got baptized as a Catholic. If she, does right. that mean she's, like, I don't even know if Catholic churches speak the same way Baptists do in terms of, like, saved or not saved. But, like, if she'd, like, definitely turned her back on that, becomes a full witch, signs a book, which she does at the end of the season, spoilers.
Right.
What does that mean for her baptism? If, you know, how does that work?
Well, okay, so the Catholic blue, it's not once saved, always saved, okay. right? So you're baptized and that, for example, if you baptize a baby and they die, you or assured that that baby is going to go to heaven, because they haven't committed any sins. It's a weird thing. So you're baptized when you're an infant and you're covered for original sin and stuff like that. And you would theoretically go to heaven if you died, but you can't be confirmed. You can't start taking communion or anything. You don't become like a full active member of the church until the age of reason, which is 7-ish or so is my understanding. Whenever you finish going through all the classes and you can make that choice. And at that point you start having to atone for your sins and doing, you know, confession and stuff like that. And then you just sort of trust that if somebody dies between baptism and that point, that the grace of God will cover them because they don't know what they're doing. There's an element of you have to know what you're doing is wrong in order for it to be a mortal sin, which is the kind that gets you sent to hell. Otherwise, you go to limbo.
Okay.
Or purgatory, not limbo. And you have to work off the effects of the sin. It's already been paid for by Jesus, but you have to work off the effects of it. And then you get to go to heaven. So basically baptized, you're guaranteed heaven unless you do something very bad. For example, you know, turn your back on God or blaspheme and a bunch of mortal sins that you die unshriven of, is my understanding. But you have like the Orthodox where they baptize, but then they also give infants communion. They're full members of the church from that point. And the argument is that, you know, you're not going to deny your child food. And this is the food of, you know, it's the flesh and blood of God. So why would you deny them that? So I kind of understand that better than you're a member of the church, but you don't get to do these things that make you a full member of the church. Right. So not sure if that explanation made any sense.
No, it did. Thank you.
So anyway.
So they come up with a solution that's basically, like, sets up, finally, the premise of the show that makes it cool and the situation everyone wants to be in, where she gets to be a witch and go to witch school, but also stay immortal and go to her mortal school with her mortal friends. And, like, wow. I'm so happy. Like, you knew that's where it was going, but...
Right, we finally got there. But... So first of all, so she gets to stay mortal. She has to attend the academy and attend a weekly black mass, which, you know what? I feel like she probably could have benefited from before this point. But, and her aunts get their powers back. They're young again. And so, yeah, this sort of sets up the actual act, you know, the active part of the series. But my thing is, so do you think... So Diana took her and had her baptized, and then Edward went and signed her off to the devil. Do you think that Diana knew what the plan was and did this to get around it? Or do you think that Edward and Diana worked this out between them to give Sabrina a choice?
I really hope it's that second one. My assumption was mostly that she knew it was happening and so made sure to do it a day earlier. I feel like if they had planned, maybe they planned it together, but planned it to be even or something, and Diana and Hilda snuck out a day early to do it. But if it was planned between them, that plan was not shared with at least Zelda, because she's completely shocked by it and betrayed.
Well, and so here's my thinking, is that, okay, so, and we're still not sure what the whole deal is with Edward and Diana. But I feel like Edward was not ignorant of the way that things work when you're making deals with the devil. And yes, he's benefiting from it and all that stuff. But I wonder if he suspected that there was going to be a trick to it. And I don't know that he thought that he was going to get killed over this. But if he thought, well, I can sort of keep this honest. If there are competing claims here, not, you know, knowing everything that was going to go down, but making it so, okay, it's not just fully that she's definitely going to be a witch. There, she's half, and we're sort of setting it up where to leave her that choice. The devil is definitely going to try and cheat, because that's what he does.
Yeah. But that, like, also, I think Edward was trying to cheat and thought, like, Webster says, like, no one's ever beaten the devil, but you just might. Like, take advantage of this time. Like, learn what you can. And I feel like Edward was definitely the kind of person that might be, like, making these plans and setting up a bunch of, like, yeah, backups to try and beat the devil at his
own game. No, it makes more sense.
And not sure how successful he'd be at it, but I definitely could see him being that kind of person.
He doesn't seem like a fool. Yeah. And he was the high priest of the Church of Night, and I don't think you get there by being super trusting and, you know, life is full of daisies kind of guy. So, but, okay. So Sabrina gets the best of both worlds at this point. And everybody's thrilled. Well, not everybody, but, you know. And then Zelda is terrible to Hilda. Again.
Yeah.
Which, okay. Hilda's been, like, she's in bed. And Zelda's just wandering around me like, hey, so phone call. You've been excommunicated. You deserved it.
I mean, fair. Like, this was one place where, yes, she's horrible, but I don't feel like she's wrong, and I'm very confused. Like, well, I don't understand why Hilda's surprised by this. Like, of course you're excommunicated. You went behind, you deliberately went against the devil and, like, betrayed your faith to get this. Like, of course you're excommunicated, but it's fine, because you want to burn the forest down anyway. You don't want a part of this. You still get your powers, you're still young again, and you no longer belong to the devil. Congratulations!
Well, but I don't know that she doesn't belong to the devil. She's just been kicked out of the group, the coven, the church. But still has her powers, which implies that the contract with the devil is still on. True. So she doesn't have a community anymore, but she's still screwed down the road. So, but yeah, no, she really shouldn't have been surprised by that when everybody's like, yeah, so I went to the enemy and signed, you know, witnessed all this and said, yeah, that's great.
So, yeah, I guess I feel like she did look genuinely scared and was like, what do I do now? And, I mean, even, I guess, if there's no other negative consequences to that, it's all she's known her entire life. She didn't really have other options.
Yeah.
And so that alone is scary. Like, even if it is just completely no side effects, just freedom, suddenly having freedom is kind of overwhelming. And but there might also be a thing of, like, but there's, like, a lot of scary things in the world. You're not going to take care of me anymore? Like, that's scary.
But I don't know. See, the thing is, I get the excommunicate. I understand why they excommunicated her. I'm just not sure what purpose it actually serves. She doesn't lose any of her powers. So, honestly, she can defend herself. We don't see the church showing up to help put up wards or to help fight off the Yule lads or anything like that. Like, it's just the community, which the loss of is a blow. But we didn't see them spending a whole lot of time hanging out, being chummy with them either. So I'm not sure, aside from just being like, listen, you did bad, you're excommunicated, I don't see what purpose it serves.
Yeah. Like, I complained a lot about how she didn't know who Blackwood was, so she wasn't, like, Sabrina wasn't involved in the church, and therefore probably the aunts weren't either. They're, like, being excommunicated from the church would be a big deal. That loss of community would be a lot. Except the Spellmans seem to kind of do their own thing now anyway. They don't go to those weekly black masses. They're not in any way involves.
Nope.
And also, for spoiler alert, in future episodes where the Church of Night is involved and where they, like, meet to decide what to do to protect their town and each other, Hilda's involved in that. She goes to the church. She's involved in their protective things. They still completely take care of her. So it basically had zero effect on her life, except that she gets to explore what it means not to be an official member of the Church of Night now and gets to, like, sort of start to have her own life.
Right.
Which is super cool.
And that's right. And Hilda deserves that because she hasn't had that chance. It's just as a plot element, it sort of happens and then doesn't come back in an effective way. So I'm okay with that. Hilda, you know, needs to go out and have her own life. But it's just a weirdly unnecessary threat. So Hilda's excommunicated. We get Blackwood and Madam Satan snarking at each other. Yeah. Yep. Which, again, she really should just eat him.
That was a note I made way up at the top. When he first suggests that, like, when, okay, if you want a human one, she will either drown her or strip search her. I was just like, okay, eat him. It's time. Like,
yep. He has outlived his usefulness.
Yep.
Please take him away. But, and then we go to the school. Because Madam Satan says, was she telling Blackwood about how the problem is all these little ties that she has and you have to snip them one at a time? And or was that earlier when Roz is having the vision? So she's not wrong. Madam Satan is not wrong. But anyway, so the school and Roz sees her eyes go black. And that's freaky and weird. And then she gets her secret book club, which, again, I don't understand why she needs
I don't
it.
Either, but I like the idea of a banned book club. It's a thing that works best not on school grounds. Like, or, like, not with official teacher oversight. It's cool that she's being the, like, you know, teacher that's rebellious and helping them do these things. But it works best when that's a thing you do on your own. Like Dead Poets Society, or like when I was in seminary, we had a Dead Theologian Society that the teachers knew about and that we did do on school grounds, to be fair. But we did it after dark and, you know, by ourselves and without a school advisor. And so it's kind of weird having what's basically an official school club, like just that they didn't get the permission for, sponsored by a club that they did get permission for, and attended by and books chosen by a teacher.
Right. And I think it would probably have a better impact if that teacher was not, in fact, an actual dean. Like, because whilst I support the reading of books, you know, and yeah, Roz could have started a book club outside of school. It's sort of like, okay, here we have all these books that nobody wants you to read. And who is encouraging you to read them? A demon.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. That's not the point of this, but I just thought it was funny.
And she does her creepy, really creepy teacher vibe thing where she's just like, oh, we've got so many books. We're going to read all of those juicy, forbidden books. I've got something planned for each of you. And looks right at Susie, blatantly. And she's like, wow.
Yes. But I'm like, okay. So my note on this is that, what is it? Listen, the look on Madam Satan's face when she looks at Susie and then Roz makes a face and Madam Satan better back will end her.
But then she's too distracted that she gets to read her books. Like, she just like grins and hugs Sabrina and it's all good.
No, but there is definitely a look when she's looking at Madam Satan, looking at Susie, and I'm like, oh dear, I don't know if you know what you've done,
you
Madam
do
Satan.
Not want to fight Roz over this.
Roz will hurt you. But yeah, no. I as much as I enjoy Madam Satan, I need her to back away from the children.
Yes.
Specifically Susie. Because Susie is just sweet. But anyway, yeah, no, Roz is definitely gonna kill her.
Yep.
So and I then think so I think that's it. So
I think next week's episode, or actually 2 weeks from now, is one is the I forget what it's called, but something about which school, basically. So we finally get to meet Nick. We finally get to see the statue I'm really excited to talk about. Next week is going to be so, so good. I'm just so glad that Sabrina's finally at witch school. And we're finally at the cool, like, power fantasy of being a half-witch.
Well, and I love Nick. The statue is weird. And, yeah, so next episode is Witch Academy. You're welcome. The Google has helped us. looking forward to Nick and proving that he is actually the devil.
Yep.
But he's cute, so it's fine.
All right, I'll see you next time. Thanks for talking to me.